What's your favorite mixed drink? Perhaps a mocktail that is alcohol-free? Do you have something special, a family recipe that you make for others when they come by? And what's the story behind some of our favorite cocktails? I'm Lee Rayburn. You're listening to The Lee Rayburn Show, and our next guest is the author of Let's Make Cocktails, a comic book cocktail book. Sarah Beacon joining us, and you can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email talk@WPR.org with your favorite cocktail stories. And Sarah, welcome to WPR News.
Thank you so much for having me, Lee.
And I want to thank you for sharing a couple recipes with our audience, which you can find online at WPR.org/Lee. And I'd like to start with the old fashioned, as that seems to be the Wisconsin brand. And you can tell us, if you would, a little bit about the story of the old fashioned, where it came from, and what makes Wisconsin's a little bit different.
Absolutely. So the old fashioned was my introduction to cocktails too. It was the first cocktail that got me interested in cocktails as sort of an art form and wanting to explore the recipes more. In some ways, the classic old fashioned is kind of our first cocktail. So the first time that the word cocktail is defined in print is in a newspaper in 1806. And it's defined as basically any type of spirit, a sweetener, water, and bitters. So if you make that recipe with whiskey as the spirit, it's called a whiskey cocktail. If you make it with gin as the spirit, it's called a gin cocktail. And over time, bartenders started to experiment with the formula. So if you add orange liqueur to that, they call it a fancy whiskey cocktail. And if you add maraschino and absinthe to it, it's called an improved whiskey cocktail. But some people missed the original formulation. And so they would go into the taverns and say, I would like to have the old-fashioned whiskey cocktail. So the name stuck. It was already called old-fashioned by the late 1800s. And it still is essentially the recipe that we still use for a classic old-fashioned.
And you can find that recipe online at WPR.org/Lee, and it's part of the Let's Make a Cocktails book. But why in Wisconsin did we turn to brandy? Do you know the answer to that, Sarah?
This is such an interesting question. I was actually reading about it not too long ago. A lot of people have suspected that it had something to do with the World Columbian Exposition, the World's Fair in Chicago, and the introduction of, I believe it was Korbel brandy to the market at the time. But I actually think there's an author named Jeanette Hurt who wrote a book called Wisconsin Cocktails, and she did a lot more research, did a little more in-depth research into what exactly happened. And her supposition is that during World War II, it was a lot harder for most places in the United States to get any kind of quality spirits because post-prohibition, a lot of the distilleries hadn't really started up production again, and things like whiskey need to be aged for quite a long while. And a lot of those distilleries, especially post-World War II, were instead sending their grain to Europe to feed people in war-torn countries rather than mashing and distilling it themselves. And at some point, just by sheer luck, a group of Wisconsin liquor distributors stumbled upon a huge stash of aged brandy. And it was like excellent Christian Brothers brandy. And so they bought it up and started distributing it. So at a time in Wisconsin history, all of this excellent brandy enters onto the market at a time when a lot of people can't find excellent other spirits. So your choices are between, like, you know, pretty bad tasting whiskey or some of the best brandy you've ever had. And this time period also coincides with kind of the first explosion of Wisconsin supper clubs on the market, that people were switching to brandy for cocktails instead of the traditional whiskey. And so the Wisconsin old fashioned became kind of its own thing.
Wow. That's a great story, actually. And I had not heard that before. But Prohibition does play into some of our history of cocktails in the United States, partly because we had to go to other countries to get them, as you mentioned, brandy. But isn't that how we also found the spirits from Mexico?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So Prohibition was in place in the United States, but it wasn't in Cuba, where a lot of people went to go and drink rum. And it wasn't in Mexico, where a lot of people went to go and drink tequila. And so both of those spirits became a lot more well known by the American consumer. And those drinks, like your margarita and your mojito, suddenly become a lot more popular in the States, especially once Prohibition ends.
Sarah, I was looking at your margarita recipe and I was thinking, that's not how I make margaritas. And I'm thinking, you know, how did you nail down the recipes for these drinks when so many of them have their own twists and nuances to them?
Absolutely. It was definitely very tricky, especially since in a lot of cases, like, everyone has their own preferences. I tried for the most part to find sort of the earliest example of a cocktail. Oh. So something like the daiquiri that's in the book is one of the earliest examples of the daiquiri, sort of the very classic formulation. Most people today, when you think of daiquiri, it's going to be extremely fruity, maybe frozen, you know, have a lot of stuff going on. But at its core, like, the very first daiquiri was just a very simple recipe with rum and lime and So I tried to sort of find, like, the earliest, most elegant, I guess, simplest formulations of these recipes. I tested many of them out and tried to find the balance that I felt like made the most sense for a home mixologist, you know, not somebody with access to a ton of ingredients or a ton of, like, specialized equipment, and go with that, because I wanted this to be a book for beginners as sort of an introduction to the art form and a way for them to, if you can nail, like, the original formulation of the margarita, then you can experiment with that and sub out agave syrup instead of simple syrup, or add different types of tequila or even a mezcal, and try different types of things once you have mastered, like, the core formula.
One of the things I was surprised with your book, Sarah Beacon, was how relatively recent some of these recipes are. You mentioned the margarita, which goes way back to Prohibition era around those parts, but the Paloma, another mezcal drink, is relatively recent, and that's not the only one in your book.
Right. I tried very hard to find sort of a mix of classic cocktails, but also modern classics as well. Things that would be something that you would typically find on an American cocktail bar menu in the 2020s, you know. And that included some drinks that were invented, only 5 or 10 years ago by, prominent mixologists working in bars in New York City or in Chicago or other places. One that was invented in Rio de Janeiro when Brazil was in the World Cup, you know. But I also wanted to, so the book is separated by chapters by spirit. Mm-hmm. So there's a chapter of whiskey and scotch and bourbon based cocktails, and a chapter of gin and Geneva based cocktails. And in each of those chapters, I wanted to have sort of, you know, the typical drinks that you would mix with this, but also include a selection of different types of ways to enjoy the drink, so that there would be at least some drinks that are very spirit forward and some drinks that are a little more citrus forward and some drinks that are maybe fizzy and lighter and easier to drink, just so you can get sort of the rundown of all of the different popular ways to enjoy each spirit.
You also detail a lot of the stories, legends, and history of where these cocktails come from, featuring a number of characters of different sorts. I'm curious, from your perspective, Sarah, who are some of your favorite people that you met in writing Let's Make Cocktails?
Oh, this is such a great question. I feel like one of my favorites is Ada Coleman, who was a female mixologist, very well respected for her time, at a time when, you know, there were very few female bartenders, you know, especially not famous and respected ones. She went by the name Coley to her regulars, and she served a lot of very famous people, actors at the time. And she is credited with inventing the drink, the Hanky Panky, which is fun. That was also a fun story too, that, obviously these days Hanky Panky as a term has a little more of a risque connotation to it. But at the time that drink was invented, it really meant more like magic, like abracadabra, hocus pocus.
So what is in the Hanky Panky Hocus Pocus, Sarah?
It is a gin-based drink, but it involves Fernet. So it's got a little bit of, it's very aromatic, but it's also got a little bit of bitterness to the end of it. It's very tasty. It's one of my partner's favorite drinks.
Sarah Beacon is our guest, comic artist, author, illustrator, and designer, Beloit College graduate, and author and artist of Let's Make Cocktails, a comic book cocktail book. And you can join our conversation with your favorite cocktail recipes at 1-800-642-1234 or questions about where your favorite cocktails came from, 1-800-642-1234 or email talk at WPR.org. The other recipe you have for us that you've offered up to our audience at WPR.org/Lee is a simple syrup. And it's something that everybody should know. But in your book, you take that simple syrup and can make it quite complex and take it in any number of different places, Sarah.
Yeah, absolutely. So many cocktails, the old fashioned obviously is one, but many cocktails involve some sort of sweetener. You can muddle sugar, but simple syrup is kind of the easiest way to introduce a sweetener to liquids, especially when you're working with cold liquids. It mixes very well, very thoroughly. And it is so easy to make. It is, you know, your basic recipe for it is going to be one part water to one part sugar. And you cook that and you dissolve it over the stove and then you've got simple syrup. But one of the great things about the recipe is how versatile it is. So a lot of times if I've got extra herbs in my garden at the end of the summer, I'll cook up that one part water to one part sugar and drop some rosemary or some lavender in it and let that steep for a while. And then you've got lavender simple syrup, ooh, which goes really well with some gin drinks. And a lot of these, a lot of the cocktail recipes will call for specialized simple syrup. So Clover Club is made with a raspberry infused simple syrup, and a Hurricane is made with passion fruit infused simple syrup. But one of my favorite things is to make an old fashioned with different flavored simple syrups and different flavored bitters. So because it's such a simple formula, you know, you can mix that up a lot. And I will grow cinnamon basil in my garden and infuse a simple syrup with cinnamon basil and then mix that with to an old fashioned with black walnut bitters. And it makes for a really rich, very round flavored version of the old fashioned.
You mentioned the Hurricane. I have had the Hurricane. I did not know I had it at the place where it was created, Pat O'Brien's in New Orleans in the 1950s. And I could have sworn after I had it, it was grain alcohol and Kool-Aid. But that is not the original recipe, is it?
I mean, it's possible. Again, I tried to find, you know, I tried to put into the book, you know, the most elegant way to make these cocktails.
Which is not grain alcohol and Kool-Aid.
Right. And, you know, and there is a way to make the Hurricane with quality spirits and quality, you know, ingredients. But I think a lot of places, you know, especially if they are serving, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people per night and they need to kick them out very quickly, you know, they're probably going to skimp on the quality of some of these things. I mean, and the Hurricane, the original recipe for the Hurricane is it does involve 4 ounces of spirit of liquor in it. And that's quite a lot for a single serving for a recipe book like this. So for my recipe, I did cut it in half.
Okay. That's why it sounded like it might taste good. So this is also a comic book, and I enjoy this. I first came across you, Sarah, during the pandemic with Let's Make Ramen. And that was sort of wonderful experience for me because it was a fun way for me to try different ways to cook noodles and in a tough time. And I really appreciated that. But, you know, why a comic book when it comes to these sort of cookbooks and cocktails?
So I'm very passionate about this. I'm obviously very biased because I want to make more of these books, but I do honestly believe that comics is kind of an ideal format for step-by-step instructions of any kind. It's able to, as a format, as a medium, it's able to reduce the details of what you're looking at so that it's very easy for the eye to parse. You get to see each step of the technique sort of played out in front of you in a very simple way. In some cases, I like to think of it almost as IKEA instructions, you know, to use
Well, some folks might
imagery.
Not take that in the best way, considering their experiences with IKEA.
But, to be able to use imagery to sort of supplement the text mm-hmm. and make instructions seem easier to understand. It makes a lot of sense to me as, I'm a visual learner. So this is a format makes sense to me personally, but I've also had people come to me and say, you know, my husband has ADHD and this is the first cookbook he's been able to follow or my child is autistic, is neurodivergent. And like, they find these instructions so much easier to follow than large blocks of text or even a video that you have to pause and restart. I really do believe that it's a very efficient and also underutilized medium for things like recipes, for instructions in general.
Interesting that in the cartoon you have purple hair and in real life you have purple hair. So I was like, that looks yes. just like Sarah in the book. I love that. Sarah Beacon. Go ahead.
In my first book, I was actually going back and forth because the purple hair was kind of new for Let's Make Ramen. And I was like, how long am I going to stick with this? But now it feels like it's part of my brand.
Yeah, and it's a very accurate depiction, which makes me wonder, is that really what Sir Francis Drake looked like?
I mean, I did. I did copy a portrait of Sir Francis Drake.
Oh, wow.
I used it as sort of my visual reference. Anytime I have a historical figure in these books, I do try to find at least one, if not more, different historical portraits of them. I mean, obviously some of them are impossible if it was before photography and they weren't important enough to have a portrait made of them. But yes, I did definitely try to get people's likenesses as close as I could.
So how did Sir Francis Drake come to be part of the story of our cocktails?
So he was part of...
He made the mojito, right? He's given credit for the mojito.
So in some stories, he is credited for the mojito. And there are a lot of cocktail histories that are very difficult to untangle because most of these were invented in taverns and bars or in the street. And it's not like there were professional historians sitting around taking down the details. So you'll get a lot of sort of conflicting stories about this, but one of the earliest versions of the mojito was actually named, as it was made with a precursor to rum, sort of distilled from sugarcane, but not aged as much as rum, was called aguardiente mm-hmm. De caña. So it's a sugarcane spirit. And one of the earliest versions of the mojito was named El Draque after Sir Francis Drake. When he was in the Caribbean sort of fighting the Spanish crown, on behalf of the English crown. And, you know, depending on who's telling the history, he's a pirate or he's a national hero.
I have a recipe here from Heather who emailed, who's been sober for some time. She has a couple favorite mocktail recipes. The one she has is called the Beerita. She takes one beer, Heineken alcohol-free, any fruit juice, limeade or lemonade, ice, and Tajin seasoning?
I think it's pronounced tajin, yeah.
Oh, thank you, tajin seasoning.
Yeah.
And that doesn't sound bad. I've had the alcohol version of that, which we called the skip and go naked for reasons, if you've had enough of them, it became obvious. But there are places for mocktails in your book too, Sarah.
Absolutely. And honestly, that mocktail sounds amazing. I would absolutely try that.
Exactly.
And I'm a big fan of a rattler, which is usually half of a beer and half a juice of some kind of fruit juice, usually grapefruit, which is so nice in hot weather. So there is a chapter of spirit-free drinks in the book. There are so many companies these days that make spirit-free versions of spirits. So you can get a spirit that's supposed to taste like gin or supposed to taste like whiskey. And obviously any of these drinks, can be made with that. But the chapter of spirit-free books, I really wanted to have them be their own recipes. And some of them are classics. So there is a Shirley Temple in there and there's an Arnold Palmer in there. Mm-hmm. But my favorite ones in there are more formulas for how to make a really interesting cocktail to your own tastes. So there's a spirit-free buck in there, and a buck is typically a gin buck is gin mixed with lemon juice and ginger ale, and a whiskey buck would be whiskey, lemon juice, and ginger ale. So if you have a ginger ale or ginger beer base, and then you mix in different types of flavored bitters or different types of flavored simple syrups, you can make a really interesting drink. One of my favorite combinations is we did a lemongrass and ginger simple syrup and mixed that with some orange bitters and some ginger ale, and it made a delicious drink. You can do raspberry simple syrup and black walnut bitters. There's so many different flavors to combine that that you can make it to your own taste, but also it's just an incredible drink all on its own, you know, without being just a version of a typical cocktail that doesn't have alcohol in it.
Some great suggestions there. Sarah in Appleton emailed us to ask, what cocktails would you recommend for a crowd?
Ooh, okay, so there are definitely some that mix up better in batches than others. This is tricky. And I came into this problem when we were doing some events, when the book first came out, and I wanted to like make drinks for the events. And so some of them are going to mix better than others. I had a decent success with the Sazerac, believe it or not, which is it's a drink from New Orleans. It is very whiskey forward. It's got a little bit of absinthe rinse to it and some interesting bitters, but I was able to mix up sort of the core of the whiskey and the simple syrup involved, and then dash some bitters in the glass and a little bit of absinthe, and then pour the whiskey, and that worked very quickly. Mocktail wise, the lemon, lime, and bitters works great for a crowd as well. It is a spirit-free cocktail that is very popular in Australia and New Zealand. It involves sort of lemon lime soda, Angostura bitters. Oh, so I should probably mention that many of the spirit-free drinks that are in the book do involve bitters, bitters typically do contain alcohol, but we're using such a small amount of them that the amount is negligible. If you are completely zero alcohol, you can get alcohol-free bitters. They are made with a glycerin base instead of an alcohol base. They're a little more expensive and a little more difficult to find, but they're also great. So lemon, lime, and bitters did also mix up very well for a crowd.
And before we run out of time here, Sarah Beacon, one of the other drinks I think of in Wisconsin is the Bloody Mary. I was surprised to learn at how recent vodka was introduced into the United States. I thought it had just always been here, but that means that the Bloody Mary is relatively recent too. And I think of it as a relatively simple cocktail, tomato juice, Worcestershire, maybe a citrus in there, but then some vodka. But we've taken it to whole new levels with the sorts of things that we put in there in Wisconsin. You're a Beloit College graduate. I'm wondering what your perspective is on the Bloody Mary and Wisconsin.
Well, so yes, you're absolutely right. And again, the recipe that is in the book, it is very much a super basic Bloody Mary, like down to the elegant roots of the Bloody Mary. And I think what surprised me most in researching that was how relatively recent we got kind of bonkers with Bloody Marys. I guess it was probably only about, 10 or 15 years ago that people started to go from just putting sort of a celery stick in there to maybe some sausage and cheese to like a whole roast chicken.
A smoked fish,
Right. The Bloody Mary is not my personal favorite drink, but when I do have it, I do like a little bit of cheese, and maybe that's the Wisconsin in me. I think it tastes excellent with a little bit of like a nice young Gouda or a good cheddar.
I think that is perfect. And Sarah, I want to thank you for one more question. Since I knew of you with Let's Make Ramen, your latest is Let's Make Cocktails. What are we going to be making next, Sarah Beacon?
So we have just started working on Let's Bake Cookies.
Yes!
it is going to be a recipe full of cookie recipes that are a cookbook full of cookie recipes. I am partnering with Kim Joy from the Great British Bake Off for this. So all of the cookies are delicious and they're also adorable. Everything has a cute little puppy dog face on it or shaped like a bumblebee. And like the decorations will be optional. The recipes I've been testing so far are outstanding. It's going to be great.
Sarah, we'll talk then. And thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I loved this.
Sarah Beacon, comic artist, author, illustrator, and designer, Beloit College graduate, and author and artist of Let's Make Cocktails, a comic book cocktail book with a couple recipes you can find online right now at WPR.org/Lee. I want to thank our team for making the show possible today. Jeff Robbins, Clara Neipert, Joel Patinaud, our executive producer, Jill Nadeau. I want to thank you for being a part of the show, our first one. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to WPR News.